Hi everyone. Today we're going to be looking at Daniel 3, and the subject of this is going to be being in the fire. And this is with the three Hebrew men that are tossed into a furnace, and what all that means for our lives and for other things, other prophecies and things. So I'd like to, you know, start with some prayer. And in Psalms 119, verse 18, and just paraphrasing, it says, "Open our eyes that we may see wondrous things from your word." It says from your law in the verse, but today we're just looking at the word and just asking the Lord to be with us today and help us to learn things and see things and understand things, and thank him for the word and instructions that he's left us, the encouragement that he's left us, and the faith that he has given each one of us, the measure of faith each one of us has. All these are gifts from God, and we just appreciate you, Lord, and thank you for being in our lives, and please be with us today as we try to glean some things out of your word. Amen. So today in Daniel 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are the focus of this chapter. Daniel isn't even in this chapter, even though it's a pretty significant story, a pretty significant chapter. We're going to see later why some commentators believe that Daniel wasn't here in this setting, in this chapter, for a reason, that there may be a type or a picture forecasting part of the plan of God in the future ahead of us. We're going to touch on that later. But first, well, let's just start at Daniel 3. We're going to read verses 1 through 3 first. Daniel 3, verses 1 through 3. It says, "Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps," which were provisional governors of large areas, "the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces, to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up." Now, in these verses, it doesn't say specifically, but most assume that the image was of Nebuchadnezzar himself. Ancient kings of that time and from that area often claimed that they had divine status. And you remember that in the last chapter, Nebuchadnezzar had just heard from Daniel that he was the head of gold in his dream image. I think this statue of gold from top to bottom, it was gold from top to bottom. It wasn't just the golden head like in the last chapter. It kind of demonstrates Nebuchadnezzar's extreme arrogance. Remember when he was pictured as only the head of gold, then that image had a chest and arms of silver and a belly and thighs of bronze, and legs of iron and feet partly of iron and clay. Well, Daniel had just finished telling him that he was the head of gold and that the other metals represented other empires that were going to follow him when he lost his kingdom. So these empires that were going to follow up were like the Medo-Persian Empire, the Greeks and the Romans. But he built this statue out of total gold. At least it was completely overlaid with gold. It seems like he was proclaiming, in spite of Daniel's message, that his kingdom wasn't going to go away. It wasn't going to meld into these other metals or other empires. Now, the measurements of this image center around the number 6, which is significant. 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide. Part of the height might have been a pedestal, because if you didn't have the image on a pedestal accounting for the 60 cubits high, the human figure that it was representing would be way out of proportion. It'd be super tall and super skinny. So a lot of historians think that this was probably a statue on top of a pedestal that added to the height. Now, the importance here is that the number 6 in the Bible is commonly accepted as the number of man, man without God in particular. Remember, there's a description of a similar beast or image in Revelations 13. And just quickly, Revelations 13 and 18, touch on the number 6, is here's wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, which you've all heard of. So this number 6, the Babylonian number system was actually a base 60. And you don't have to really understand the base, but this was called a sexagesimal system compared to our decimal system, where we count to 10. And then once we get to like 0 through 9, and then the next number, you start a second column of numbers, and that goes up 0 through 9. So it's a base 10. You go up, you use 10 numbers and then go forward. Well, the Babylonians would go 60 numbers before they would go to another column. So 60, there weren't 60 different symbols, like we have a different symbol for each number that we use. They just had 2 symbols. There was a symbol, an image of a hook on one thing. These were cuneiform kind of symbols. And then there was a wedge image. So just pictures of a hook and a wedge on these little tiles. There weren't 60 separate symbols. So the orientation of the symbols determined what number it was. And this base 60 made fractions easier, since 60 could be divided by so many other numbers evenly. So it made math simpler for them. And the interesting thing is that this base 60 that they had is really the original mathematical basis of what we use today. When we use 60 seconds or 60 minutes or 60 degrees in a circle, this all goes back to Babylonian times. Now, the use of that kind of number system might have started as early as 1800 BC, which was long before the Babylonians actually had an empire. It was used throughout the area. But the important thing here is that the focus is on 6, or multiples of 6. And with this symbolic Bible number, I think God is pointing out that this is a culture that's being focused on man, or things of man, like false worship and power and wealth and faith in fake gods and not in the true God. But it was all oriented around man. There was an early church historian, Josephus, who was actually Jewish, but worked for the Romans, building a history. And he claims that another Babylonian long before Nebuchadnezzar, called Nimrod, who had the Tower of Babel built, he had that tower built because he could never fall victim to another of God's floods, even though God had already promised Noah that the earth would never be destroyed with a flood again. he must have also thought that he was at least equal to God. The whole culture then was about these leaders feeling like they were divine and equal with God. And this is what focuses around that number six. And there was nothing godly about this civil and religious Babylonian system. It was all about man's power, what they could control. So let's continue on in verses 4 and 7 of Daniel 3. It says in verse 4, "Then a herald cried aloud, 'To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace.'" Verse 7, "So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre, in symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up." Now, in studying this, you know, my go-to Bible is the King James Version, but then we mostly use the New King James Version. It was interesting that something popped up when I was reading the King James. This list of instruments was translated differently. So here where it says, it uses the word in symphony with all kinds of music. It was interesting that the King James Version interpreted that word that they use for symphony as another musical instrument called a dulcimer. And this dulcimer was like an ancient Persian area instrument. It was a stringed instrument, typically had four strings, although that could vary. Some translations even interpret that this dulcimer was a bagpipe kind of instrument. In other words, this is an area where the translation is difficult. Now, just personally, I've always loved woodworking. And when I was a kid, my first real woodworking project was building a dulcimer, of all things. And it was a four-string dulcimer. It was a fun project, but I never played it. I didn't like it. I didn't understand the sound it was creating. I didn't understand anything about it. So my first project ended up in a closet, never to be seen again, basically. But it was just kind of interesting that the translations on such a little thing can vary so much. So now Nebuchadnezzar sets up a massive golden image and commands everyone to bow down and worship it when the music plays. The penalty for disobedience and not worshiping the image is death in a fiery furnace. Now, Daniel 3 verses 1 through 7 here is actually a preview of the image of the beast in symbolic Babylon, which is talked about in Revelations 13. You'll see so many similarities between the two. In Revelations, the beast from the earth caused all to worship the image of the first beast or be killed. So in the future, there's also going to be a Gentile ruler who will demand worship that only belongs to God. Just like earlier examples, including Nebuchadnezzar and his golden image that we're looking at right now. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 to 4. 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 to 4. "Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." And then if we go to Revelations 13, which I was just mentioning. Revelations 13, verses 3 through 8. Revelations 13, verse 3, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Now, in verse 15 of Daniel here, there's a verse coming up that sounds very similar to this thing about who is able to make war with him. Verse 15, it says, and who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? So Nebuchadnezzar has the same kind of attitude as what's going on in Revelations 13. In verse 5 of Revelations 13, it says, and he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. And then in Revelation 13, the same chapter, verse 15, it says, what happens to those that don't worship him? These are the consequences. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So the word of God gives us a look further into the future from this beast that wanted worship and was threatening those that they would be killed. The beast and the false prophet end up being thrown into the fire themselves, while those that don't worship the beast will come through pretty much untouched by the fire. The fire of the, here we're talking about in the future, this would be tribulation times. Here's a reference to the consequences of this beast in the future. And remember, there's a lot of similarities here between Nebuchadnezzar and his image. Revelations 19, verses 19 to 21. Revelations 19, 19 to 21. And I saw the beast, the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet who worked signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone, and the rest were killed with a sword which proceeded from the mouth of him who sat on the horse. And all the birds were filled with their flesh. So, these images of beasts, these leaders, think they're pretty high and mighty, but the Bible tells us what the ultimate end will be of them. Now, for those that worship the beast or his image, there's a consequence to that too. In Revelations 14, verses 10 to 11, Revelations 14, verse 10 to 11, says, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, who worship the beast and his image, and whoever receives the mark of his name. So nothing good comes out of all this false worship. Back to Daniel 3. We'll continue on with verse 8, 8 through 12. So flip back. It says, therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, and psaltery in symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews among whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. So, believers may face pressure at times, and this can be very subtle pressure, subtle peer pressure, or it can be very overt pressure. These pressures are to compromise their faith in order to conform to what the current cultural or societal expectations and pressures are. We see a lot of that in our own day. There is already Christian persecution starting, and people are pressured to conform with maybe what governments say, or just the way the general culture is merging and what they're pressured to accept as okay. So God alone is worthy of worship. There's no exceptions to that. With our faith, we need to stick to our Lord God and not be drawn away by all these other things. We don't worship political leaders. We don't worship sports figures or kings or celebrities. And we don't worship religious leaders. We worship God alone. So now, Daniel, it reminds me of other stories in the Bible where an evil leader, or who we might call a beast, persecutes the righteous for not participating in false worship. But then the righteous ultimately triumph, which is a picture of the future also. So in the story of Esther, the king commanded that everyone would pay homage to Haman, who was an evil commander promoted to be over all of the princes of the kingdom. Now Mordecai, who was openly a Jew and a first cousin to Esther, he was her mentor and guardian, he refused to pay homage, and Haman became filled with wrath and decided to push for the king to issue an edict to kill all the Jews in the kingdom. However, Esther had influence with the king and ultimately turned the tables on Haman. The Jews were saved from certain death, which was their fiery trial. This is their tribulation. And Haman, who is a picture of a beast, ended up on the gallows instead. God was with the Jews. So once again, it's another story of God honoring the righteous. And there's judgment on those demanding false worship. It's also a little like the story of Herod in the time of Jesus's birth. He was an evil king, and he gave a hideous proclamation to kill all of the male Jewish children who were under 2 years old so that he could eliminate the future king of the Jews, because all reverence was to be paid to Caesar and Rome and not to this prophesied Jewish leader, Messiah. Now, in the story, the Magi refused to help Herod the Great to point him where Jesus was. And Jesus and his family were warned in a dream and were able to survive the persecution and slaughter that followed, unlike many others. God the Father was with them and warned them. And here's the ultimate result for the evil King Herod. He later died of gangrene, which was infested with worms. His grandson, Herod Agrippa I, kind of continues the family tradition. He was worshipped as a god and not a man. And then he was struck down by an angel, and he was eaten by worms seems like there's a pattern for those who want to be worshiped instead of worshiping God. So the key point of these stories is that these things aren't just about leaders demanding political loyalty. This goes way past. They're about enforcing worship of false gods. And the kings or leaders are demanding what belongs only to God. Now, back in Revelations 13, the account was that many would worship the beast or his image, but a small remnant of believing Jews, just like the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who we'll be looking at shortly in Daniel, this small remnant of Jews won't submit even when faced with fire, and they will be brought through the tribulation by the Lord. He will be in that fire with them, just like we'll see that he was in the fire with the three Hebrew men. So Daniel 3, verses 13 to 15. Daniel 3, verses 13 to 15. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" See, Nebuchadnezzar thought he was above all gods. So now here's where there's some opinions of why Daniel wasn't here in a chapter about a fiery trial. Some commentators actually said, well, he might have been away on government business at the time. You know, one of my thoughts was he might have been gone fishing for the day. Who knows? But Daniel, who is in charge of everything in the kingdom under the king, he's not there. And according to several commentaries, on a deeper level, Daniel may be a picture of the church being taken away before the fire or before the tribulation begins. Now, if you accept that premise, that Daniel was a type of the church, then the church won't be there during the fiery tribulation. And Daniel being gone is a pretty good picture of God's plan to spare his church from that fire. There's some other examples in type of the church being taken away before some type of tribulation. Remember, if you go back to Genesis, Enoch was taken before the flood. Noah had to go through the ordeal of the flood, but was given life-saving instructions first by God, and therefore he was saved from destruction. But Enoch was taken before that. You go to Lot, who was called Righteous Lot. He was warned by angels and left before Sodom burned. That was in Genesis 19. In Revelations 14, there is a reaping of the earth before the angel with power over fire came forward. And then following in Revelations 15 is when come the plagues and judgments of the tribulation. So that's kind of a key point, that there was a reaping of the earth before the fire. Now, in the setting in Revelations, you know, the remnant of believing Jews at that time in particular will be going through a period of tribulation. It will be for testing, chastisement, for learning. And as we know from fire, it's to be a refining fire. It's a spiritual purification that folks will be going through as they get to learn to know who God is. So Daniel 3, verses 16 through 18. Daniel 3, 16 through 18. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. So now, an observation here is that they had faith and resolve before the test came. They already had their faith established. Nebuchadnezzar gives them another chance, but they respond with one of what I think is the most powerful declarations of faith in Scripture. It says, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us, but if not, we will not serve your gods. One of my favorite Christian songs is Even If by Mercy Me. Everybody has songs that touch their heart, and this is one that really gets me every time. The first chorus in it is, I know you're able and I know you can save through the fire with your mighty hand, but even if you don't, my hope is you alone. This was the sentiment of the three Hebrews here. Kind of gives you goosebumps just even thinking about it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego believed God could deliver. They trusted his plan. Even if he doesn't deliver them from the fire, their hearts are that we believe God can, but even if he doesn't, we're still going to serve him. A big lesson here is that true faith is not conditional on the outcomes. It trusts God's power and wisdom. God's presence is often most real in our trials. Deliverance may come through difficulty, not always by being spared from it. So even in our prayer life, if we're praying for something in particular, it has to be with the faith that if the outcome isn't what we're hoping for, that God has the bigger plan for us, and that he is going to deliver us from it one way or another. Daniel 3, verses 19 to 23. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Now, this furnace was probably a brick kiln. And when it talks about being heated seven times hotter than normal, here's another biblical number. Seven is usually accepted as a number of completeness in the Bible. And in other words, this is pointing out that this furnace was like completely heated, as hot as it could get. Verses 24 and 26. This is when a miracle happens. It says, then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. He says, look, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. talking about Jesus. Now, if we look into the future, I think this term loose, here we have a natural application of they're walking free in the fire. This is also a picture of those during the tribulation that are coming to get to know God and serve him, that they had been bound with earthly values, false worship, maybe misguided beliefs or bad priorities. You know, in John 8:32, it says, "The truth shall make you free." So in this case, in the times ahead of us, I think it's the truth that is going to loose people while they're going through their fire. Now the three here were free, full of faith, and had the Son of God with them in the fire. Verse 26, then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire. And the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. Let's look at Isaiah 43, verse 2. Isaiah 43, verse 2. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, nor shall the flames scorch you. How appropriate is that for this setting? Romans 11, verse 26. Romans 11, verse 26. And so all Israel will be saved. It is written, the deliverer will come out of Zion, and he will turn away ungodliness from Jacob. For this is my covenant with them when I take away their sins. And this is, kind of referring, this is a time ahead of us also where the Lord will save them through that tribulation. So the main lesson of this entire chapter is that none of us are ever alone in the furnace, and through faith, God will be with us. His plans may often be considerably different than our plans, and I think every one of us has experienced that in our lives, and look back and see, well, God did have a better plan for me. Rough times at the time, but there was a better plan. God didn't keep these three Hebrew men from the fire. He met them in the fire. He may not keep us away from trials and our own tribulations, but he's always there with us. We just need faith in his plan for each one of us, his plan for us, each family member, each friend, and even every person he puts in our path. There's a plan. And we have to have faith in that. Daniel 3, verse 28 to 30. Daniel 3, verses 28 to 30. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel, Jesus, and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So these three men emerge unharmed. Not even the smell of smoke is on them. And Nebuchadnezzar praises God, praises their God, and promotes them in the end. In type, the time ahead of us, Israel is going to be saved through this fire of the tribulation, and they will be leaders of others as Gentile nations come to them in Jerusalem to find out more about the Lord. The faith of just three men resulted in empire-wide respect for the God of the Hebrews. That's pretty remarkable. So faithfulness often attracts attention from others. Standing firm with your faith can bring opposition, but it can also bring respect and admiration. Faithfulness glorifies God publicly, and God's deliverance can influence even the most unlikely observers, just like Nebuchadnezzar. Our response to trials can point others to God, and faithfulness can be contagious. And I think every one of us can see exhibitions of faith in our own church, the people we fellowship with all the time, where there is a contagious feeling of how faithful someone is when they're going through trials. The examples that they set, that's one of the big things about fellowship and knowing what people are going through. And when you're praying with others, is that you see that no matter what they're going through, they have that faith and that happiness with God, that God is more important in their lives than anything. So we'll close this out. I love this chapter because of the emphasis on faith and God being there in the fire with you. Just want to say, Lord, please let each one of us have the faith and courage that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had. Thank you for their example. Help us to trust you in everything and trust your plans, even though we may not always understand them. We trust you. And please help us to see that even our hardships and trials are something that's working good through you. Now, our trials might be our own personal weaknesses, or maybe some of us have relationship issues or job issues or health issues or financial issues. But just strengthen our faith so that we see you in every one of these trials, and that we can depend on you and feel your love in everything that happens, no matter what the cost. Just like these three Hebrew men, no matter what the cost, we're going to worship you and have faith in you. And just thank you for being with us. Thank you for your word. And you've just given us so many blessings and heaped so much on us. And we may not deserve all this goodness from you, but we certainly thank you for it. And, just thanks for everything you do in our lives. Amen.